Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. That is Esther 4:14. I'm Sandra Fleck of Justice for Orphans. Joining me in the studio today is local special education teacher and single foster mom, Carrie Dubois. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you.
So you're a single woman with a career as a special ed teacher. What led you to become a foster parent?
When I was about 5 years old, there was a family in our church, and she was a foster parent. And I just saw that she took in these little kids, and actually they went back to their parents and came back to her several times. Obviously, at 5 years old, I didn't know all the ins and outs of that. But from that moment on, God had just really placed a burden in my heart to become a foster parent.
Wow. So it's from the time you were a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And now you foster with Northern Rivers, which is sort of Northeast Parent and Child Society,
right,
and Parsons, kind of all under the same umbrella. How long have you been fostering?
About a year and a half. It'll be 2 years in October.
Okay. All right. And in that time, how many children have been in your home?
I've had 13 kids. I had one group for a year and a half. So the other kids have been a little bit short term. My first group was a week and a half. That was a 7 week old, a 1 year old, and a 4 year old.
Wow.
So I didn't sleep or eat for that week and a half.
I believe it.
And then they were returned back to their mom. And then my next group was three little ones for a year and a half. And they are with their aunt in another state. And then I had a group of three girls just for about 2 weeks. And then right now I currently have, I had an 8 year old and his 2 year old brother. The 8 year old is not with me anymore, but I still have his 2 year old brother.
So you talk about groups, sibling mm-hmm. groups. Why do you sort of prefer sibling groups, right? Why is that?
One of the huge problems in foster care is keeping siblings together. A lot of times these groups are sibling groups of three or four or five. And that's a lot to ask somebody to take just because it's a lot of kids plus the room it takes. And so I've been blessed to have – I have three bedrooms available in my home so I can take a large sibling group so that they're not separated.
That's right. Because it's such a tragedy, really, when kids come into care. But then when siblings have to be separated, it just makes it even more mm-hmm. tragic.
Yep.
That's hard. So parenting in general is difficult. Foster parenting is hard. As a single parent, how do you do it?
I have some really great support people. I have another foster family that actually lives two houses down, which is great because if they need to spend the night somewhere, it should be at a foster home. They do make exceptions in case of emergencies, but that's the goal. So that's something real easy for me. And basically all of my friends were very willing to be support people, which means that they have to be willing to have a DMV check on their license if they want to drive. They used to be fingerprinted. They don't do that anymore. So it's real easy to become a support person. You just kind of have a quick interview on the phone. They just kind of go over the rules. And that allows them to be able to babysit, watch their kids. I can drop them off at their house for a couple hours. Also, my parents and my brother live locally, so they are great resources for me too. So it's just knowing that you have support around you and knowing those people you can trust. My church has been fantastic, always willing if I needed to get help or even just help getting stuff. Like when I moved, like half the church came and helped me move because I was now moving with three children instead of just myself. So
wow.
It was a much larger undertaking than I was used to.
So, and your church is King's Chapel mm-hmm. in Glenmont,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah.
And you had mentioned to me before that they also brought you meals.
They did, yep, with my first two groups. They had cooked and had meals for 3 weeks worth.
Wonderful.
So for 3 weeks, I had food in the fridge, and as I was trying to figure out how to deal with a baby and a and you know two other little ones.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something that we talk about a lot on this show is trying to, you know, really show the body of Christ that not everybody is called to adopt, not everybody is called to foster, and we love it when people have the heart to do that and they step out in faith and do that. But there's something for everybody to do, and it can be something as simple as bringing meals mm-hmm. when a family gets a new placement and they're trying to navigate those challenges.
Yeah, there's a lady in my church, and she kind of has taken it upon herself to be the grandma for my Aww. Kids. And so with this last group, she quilted blankets for them. So they each had a special blanket.
Very nice.
And then just, you know, little gifts and things like that, and just spending some extra time with them on Sunday. And so people kind of, you know, figure out how they can help and what they can do. So it's
That's wonderful. That's what we want to see. Because you also work full-time. You're mm-hmm. a special education teacher. So how do you manage having a full-time job as a single mom plus foster?
Mm-hmm. So with foster care, they will help you pay for daycare. So that's not an added cost on top of it, which is wonderful. So my little one goes to full day daycare, and I found one right in town. Although that I will say is the hardest part of fostering is finding daycare. The smaller they are, you know, the harder it is to find, just because there's not a lot of availability. You know, when you call and they're like, "Oh, when do you want them to start?" and they're expecting you to say 3 months or 4 months from now, and I'm like, "Tomorrow," you know, they're like, "Oh,"
yeah.
But so far, God has provided, and I've always had daycare. So that's been a blessing. And then, of course, being a teacher, I have the summers off, so that's nice, and some big holidays off, so that's normally not an issue. But
so, and I can see where that would be a challenge with daycare, because kids come in suddenly, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden a foster parent is faced with, I need daycare starting tomorrow or mm-hmm. next week at the very latest. And like you said, daycare centers are often, there's waiting lists mm-hmm. to get children into daycare. So I was thinking that's really another way that the church could fill a void by establishing a certified daycare. I've seen churches that have daycare programs in them. And if a church would focus on foster families. So when, you know, a family gets a new placement, working foster parents can easily access daycare. We talk about foster care and adoption, but we know not everybody, like I said before, is called to do that. But we are all called to do something. And that sounds like an area that really a church could begin to consider. A daycare program for foster families is a way to meet a huge need, a program that would purposely keep spots open for those sudden placements to fill just for foster kids. So I'm hoping that somebody listening out there, a church listening, consider that that is something that you could do. There's a way you could fill a void there. I just want to remind our listeners that this is Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and my guest today is local special ed teacher and single foster mom, Carrie Dubois. Carrie, in the 2.5 years that you've been fostering, what has been the most rewarding part of fostering?
There's so many. Just within the time frame of seeing the kids change, and you know, it's hard when you're in the nitty gritty and the day to day of it. You don't see it. So, you know, having people say, you know, boy, that she's a different girl than when you first got her, or they've come so far with you, or my group that I had for a year and a half, the aunt that they went to go live with was talking to the caseworker, and she said to the caseworker that was the best year that they spent in their whole life, and she did so much for them. And so the caseworker came back and shared that with me. So you know, those kind of encouragements along the way, you know, and some of it's just the little day-to-day stuff, you know, the giggling on the couch and the, you know, just seeing them happy and seeing them knowing that they're safe and you know, that they're loved and for as long as you have them for.
And that's a big part of it, because kids come in having experienced some kind of trauma kids don't come into care for anything that they themselves have done wrong. It was something went wrong within their family unit or some harm was done to them and they had to be removed from the home. And that's a traumatic experience for mm-hmm. a child. So then they come into a foster home and that's a strange place with strange people. And so there's a fear aspect to it where kids just don't know and they're kind of in a state of fear. So when you can see them go from that fear to beginning to trust and kind of settle down. And I know you shared with one of your kids, they wouldn't allow any touch mm-hmm. in the beginning. And then, and what was, how did you see a yeah. change there?
Yeah. So for about 3 months, she just didn't want to be hugged or cuddled or just very standoffish. And, she was four. You know, that was difficult for me to kind of, you know, like she didn't want to get kissed goodnight or, you know, so you just have to kind of read them and kind of react, you know, the way that they're sending, you know, their signals. And then after about 3 months, it was just like a light bulb went off or she just felt comfortable. And so then it was like cuddles on the couch and kisses goodnight and things that I was kind of used to and, you know, very willing to give. But you have to be... You have to be careful. You can't, you know, just assume that they want to be hugged and kissed and loved.
Right.
You know, you have to figure it out a different way. You have to show them their love in a different way if you can't, you know, kind of be physical with them.
At least until they're open mm-hmm. to that.
Yep.
Now, you had shared also that you've had conversations with kids to kind of prepare them for, because you've had kids that were very little mm-hmm. and had to go find food for themselves. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So a lot of times the caseworkers won't tell you a lot of information either because they don't know it or it's confidential. And so you find out little bits and pieces while you're driving in the car or while you're at the dinner table. And so it's really important to just kind of when you hear things to be able to handle it in a way that's not demeaning to their parents. You know, so when the four-year-old's telling you that she knows how to cook dinner and you say, oh, what do you mean? And she's telling you that she's microwaving hot, you know, ramen noodles in the microwave. And you know that's not safe. You know, you don't want to deter that because if they have to go back to that situation, you want them to be able to know how to feed themselves. But just ways of saying, like, well, that's not really a safe thing to do or – you know, if that happens, you need to talk to somebody at school. You know, like you should tell your teacher if mommy's not feeding you dinner. You know, and they said, like, well, the teacher's not going to feed me dinner. You know, and so just kind of saying, no, but the teacher is going to find somebody who can make sure you're safe and you're eating and you have food. So just kind of teaching them ways that they can protect themselves. And if something isn't the way it should be, that there are other people to help. They're not just alone. And so you would hope that when they go back to their parents, those things would be fixed and somebody would be there supporting the parents. But if they're not, you know, that also to give the kids kind of an idea of what life should be.
Because reunification is the goal
Absolutely.
Of foster care. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that happens and it's good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Or sometimes when it does happen, kids end up back in care. Mm-hmm. So to be even really teaching them mm-hmm. as they're in your home, then that's a valuable way to help them. So it is rewarding. Foster care is rewarding. It can also be very hard. And you actually attended our Empowered to Connect parent training, our Connect class last fall. And how has Empowered to Connect helped you in parenting the kids that come into your home?
So there's a lot of reading that goes along with it, but they were really excellent books. And actually, several times I've gone back to try to reread chapters or look for things. When kids have trauma, their brains are changed. And so even just learning about those things and kind of just helps reassure you because you're like, am I going crazy? Like, did I not just talk to him about this 15 times and it's still not sinking in? So just some of that head knowledge was very helpful. Also, the great thing about the training specifically was every week you learn specific tools mm-hmm. that you can go back and use. And some of the homework is that you actually go try the tool out with them and see. And so some of them I've definitely used a lot. Some of them probably I need to go back and look and go like, oh, yeah, that was – let me try that one. So that was helpful. And the other thing, too, was I feel like that was my first experience with parents – that were foster parents. I've been, you know, I'm part of a mommy group at church, but they're not foster parents. So it's nice to be part of those groups, but it's a little different. You know, when you say things like, well, I have three kids right now, but I don't know how long I'm going to have them for, you know, people look at you strange. So when you're with foster parents, they're like, yep, I get it. So it was nice just in that to meet some local parents who were foster parents who I'm actually now friends on Facebook. Nice. So, you know, just to kind of make those connections was really great as well.
And I think, too, it can be it's being a foster or adoptive parent. It can be a lonely place mm-hmm. because our kids are different. And we have to parent them differently. And well-meaning friends with biological kids will give you all kinds of wonderful advice that really doesn't work mm-hmm. with our kids from hard places, as Dr. Purvis calls them. So to be able to have that kind of a support network, another support network of other foster parents who get it, who know what you're talking about, who know how hard it can be, it can just be so encouraging for the parents just to kind of keep going through. You're not the only one walking through this, and there's a place to go to talk and have that support. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned the tools. What are some of the tools that you learned in the class that you implemented and that really helped you?
My two kind of go-to ones is called the do-over. And that's really a chance for kids to try it again. You know, sometimes they don't know what the right way is because they were never taught the right way. They were never modeled the right way. So, you know, simple things like a nasty response or, you know, taking a toy away from another friend, you know, just walking over there and saying, I want you to do it again. And sometimes I don't necessarily teach them how to do it. I want to see if they know. And sometimes they'll do it again the same way. And I'm like, no, I want you to do it differently. And so then I'll, you know, and then that's a 30-second, you know, we're going to do it this way instead. Or, you know, one of my big ones with my 8-year-old boys is that tone of voice. You know, the words that you're saying are fine, but you're saying it in a tone of voice that I don't like. And so I'll just model what the tone of voice should sound like in the same exact words they're using. And you just have them practice and then you just go on. So it's quick and easy and it's right on the spot. The other thing is use of time in instead mm-hmm. of time out. When you send kids away who have had trauma to their bedroom to cool down, it really doesn't help them. It helps you because it gets them
away
out of your
from
face.
You. Yeah.
But what it does to them is it just reaffirms that they're a bad kid. It reaffirms that shame complex that mm-hmm. they already come with you. And they may go upstairs and just start disassociating, and then they're not really learning anything anyway. They're right. just learning that, you know, she doesn't want me around her,
right.
and that doesn't help your relationship. So time in, and it can look a little different. What I do is I have a special chair. So it's still kind of that timeout chair kind of routine, but it's right in the living room. So it's just a place so that they can go. There's no toys. They can just have 2 minutes. But I'm still able to talk to them. Mm-hmm. So I'm still able to say, like, I want you to, you know, quiet your voice down. I want you to have calm legs, whatever you need to do to kind of talk through them mm-hmm. To get them to calm down. And then also, you know, then you can see when they're ready. Oh, I can see that you're ready. Okay, you can go back and play. The other thing with time in is simply having them come do something with you instead. Mm-hmm. That's the other option. So if they can't, you know, I see that you can't play over there right now. Come help me, you know, wash these dishes or something like that. And I have found that kids in foster care love to help. They love to do chores. They love to do those things. And I think a lot of it is because they see them as grown-up tasks mm-hmm. and they want to be grown up. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be kids anymore. They really either they've been so grown up in their previous experience that they're used to that and they don't know how to be a kid.
Right.
Or they just like that's a grown up thing and that's a cool thing to do. So, right. you know, quickly having some chores for them to do with you, you know, together. It helps as well.
It helps. Because a lot of times I think, like you said, when sending kids to their room or, you know, go to your room for a time out, it's, you know, I think parents just think, well, they're going to go to their room, they're going to calm themselves down, and then they'll be able to come back and behave the way they're right. supposed to behave. But kids with a trauma background, they're not able to do that mm-hmm. because they haven't learned how to calm down. They don't know how to just on their own behave. So like you said, you're just reaffirming, you know, sending them away, kind of like that rejection, mm-hmm. go away. They don't really know what to do. And we had that experience in our home with one of our kids that, you know, yeah, it was wonderful. My favorite thing used to be, this was 15 years ago before we knew anything about Empowered to Connect or TBRI, early bedtime. So you're going to go to bed at 7 o'clock. That's your consequence. So it was great for me because I got a break from all of it. And then I thought that this child was learning a lesson, right? And then eventually the child would be like, well, I'll behave because I don't want to keep going to bed early. But really, that's not ever what happened. They never learned their lesson. Mm-hmm. It just kind of reaffirmed, you know, if this didn't happen to me, I wouldn't be here at this house. Or, you know, they're just kind of like disassociate, mm-hmm. like you said. So they never really learn that. They're not learning their lesson. So that it's not that, you know, sometimes we think, common sense and things like that. It's you can't go with that thought process with kids who've experienced trauma because that's not how their brains are wired. Mm-hmm. Like you said, trauma impacts the brain, and that's a big part of understanding that. And the do-overs, I love that too, because a lot of times kids really don't know the right way to do things, and to have them do it over and I think it makes me think of that saying that we learned a lot in class about those neurons that fire together, wire together, and it's just training the brain the right way to do these things, whether it's they're just running downstairs and you want them to turn around and go back up and come downstairs slowly so that they can learn that behavior. This is the right way we go down the stairs, or we don't slam the door, or whatever the behavior mm-hmm. would be. So those are all really, really important.
Yeah. And another thing, not so much with my first group. Each group is different. So you know, you learn different things, or you kind of have different experiences. The little boy had oppositional defiance disorder, and so lots of arguing. So even though there are good tricks, they were, you know, still met with a lot of resistance. But he gave me, you know, well, that's how we do it at home. That's how we do it at home. And so, so even being able to explain, you know, well, you know, you're not going to not say that that's not the right way to do it, but just, well, in my home, I would like you to try it this way, or this is how we do it at this house.
Right.
And so, again, just being careful not to
condemn
yeah. what was happening, you know, but just say, we're going to do it this way instead, or that's not the way I'm going to, you know, that's not the way I do it here. So, so even as you're reteaching and you're teaching, you know, maybe the more polite way or the more socially right. acceptable way, still not condemning, you know, mom and dad if that's the right. the comeback from the kids. It's really
right.
important.
Because they could be getting reunified mm-hmm. and you don't want to do that. So all good tools. As we wrap up today, Carrie, what is on your heart that you want our listeners to really hear today?
You know, I think if God lays it on your heart to be a foster parent, there's never a good time. I was waiting till I was going to get married. And so that was kind of like in the back of my head, like, yeah, I'm going to be a foster parent when I get married. And that just it hasn't happened yet. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to wait anymore. And I'm just going to go for it. And so God has provided those different support people for me so that I'm able to do this. You know, I think you're never going to feel ready, or you're never going to feel like it's a right time. There's a quote that I always have. It says, you know, if you ask yourself if you're ready to adopt or become a foster parent, just remind yourself that they never asked to become a foster kid, or, right. you know, it wasn't their choice right. in their timing. So, you know, if God lays it on your heart, certainly look into it. Or there's lots of different organizations, and they're all great. They all have, you know, pros and cons. So just ask around, ask people who have worked with those organizations, see which one fit for you and your lifestyle. But really just go ahead and start asking questions.
Go ahead and do it.
Because
mm-hmm. we hear, I think oftentimes in the news, it's all those bad, scary, nightmare stories.
Yeah.
You know, and here you're a perfect example. You're a single mom and you're doing this mm-hmm. and you've got a support system. And yes, it's hard, but there's tools, there's supports, and you're really making a difference in the lives of the kids that come into your home. So it's Is it worth it? Do you think it's worth it?
Yes, it's absolutely worth it.
Absolutely worth it.
Absolutely, yep.
So another aspect I think that we had talked about previously was self-care, because I think that's a big area that we're not good at doing, whether you're an adoptive parent or a foster parent or even just a busy mom with biological kids. Self-care is so important. Mm-hmm. So what have you learned about that?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to Florida next week without children. And so part of me feels so guilty about it. And the other part of me is like, nope, because when I come back, I'm going to be better and charged and, you know, be able to, you know, start school and start a new school year and also be able to be a good, happy mom. Because if I'm exhausted and tired and miserable, then I'm not doing anybody any good anyway. So it's really, it doesn't have to be a big week vacation, but even just make sure you're still making time to go out with your friends or having date nights with husbands or all of those things are just really, really important.
Get a pedicure.
Yes.
Read a book.
And some of it is like when they're visiting their parents, that gives you 2 free hours. It, you know, like I'm learning not to use that time to clean the house. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, right, I went and got a pedicure or I'm going and reading a book or just taking that time to, you know, to focus on yourself a little bit to help you out.
Great. But, yeah. Great. All very good points. Carrie, thank you for what you're doing in your home, opening your home to foster kids, and thank you for being on the show today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And if you're interested in becoming a foster parent, like Carrie mentioned, there are great agencies out there. You can go online and check with your county. If you're in the Capital District area, you can go online and find the contact information for Northern Rivers, Northeast, Parent Child, Parsons, Berkshire, St. Catharines. There's lots of different options out there. We also thank you for joining us today. To learn more about foster care and adoption, you can visit our website, justicefororphansny.org. And if you enjoyed today's show, you can listen to more episodes of Orphans Know More right on our website. Just click on Radio Show, and then the menu will show you the show Orphans Know More. Click there, and there's a drop-down menu of lots of different shows to choose from. You can also help us continue our radio ministry by making a tax-deductible gift to JFO. We're an all-volunteer organization, and we could use your help to stay on the air. Our mission is to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless. JFO inspires, educates, and equips the body of Christ toward adoption, foster care, and orphan ministry. I'm Sandra Flack, and I would love to come to your church to share why and how we must walk out James 1:27. So to learn more, you can contact me at our website. Again, that's justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans Know More next Friday.